Warning, this podcast has stories of real-life events and true crime that happens every day. These stories may contain adult language and graphic or disturbing details not suitable for everyone. Listener discretion is advised. In our society, most people are content to go through their daily lives safely and peacefully. But our society is not always safe or peaceful. For that reason, some men and women answer a higher calling to defend and protect their fellow man. You probably know someone who is one of these people, or maybe you are one of these people. The ones who see and do the things most people would never want to. These things are sometimes heroic and beautiful, but often they are horrific and terrifying. It's these things they don't share about with other people. It's these things they carry with them, so you don't have to. But when they get together, they talk to each other about them. And they call these stories war stories.
Welcome to another episode of War Stories. I'm Tom. And again, filling in for John is Chuck. What's up, dude?
Hey, man. What's going on? Just out here at the house.
Right?
Down the street from you.
That's the funny part. We're in separate houses, but we're down the street from each other.
Yeah.
Just because for scheduling sake, it's so much easier.
Yeah. Believe it or not, I'm still remodeling my house.
I know.
It's great.
It's the never ending remodel, right?
Getting close.
Yeah. So John is still out. Charlie's Chuck has been filling in. You forgot you like to go by Chuck. We have a friend of Chuck's here, which is Chris. How are you, Chris?
Good. How you guys doing?
Good.
Oh, you know, as Aaron likes to say, I'm living the dream with my eyes open.
Very nice. Very nice. I checked out you guys' podcast when Chuck told me about it. It's pretty cool. It's really like a coppers kind of podcast. I felt like I was like at the bar after work telling some war stories. It was nice.
Right. It's kind of like choir practice without the IA.
Yeah. You got to be careful with some of that stuff. But yeah.
Yeah, there's a department that shall remain nameless, but its initials are LAPD, and they're actually serving Instagram, or they're trying to, I guess the chief is looking for a way where he can get a court order to force Instagram to turn over information about users that ran a page.
Page
called Choir Practice or Choir Boys or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
And there was memes and stuff and things that were said that aren't illegal, right? But they could be construed as violations of department policy for probably conduct unbecoming or some chicken shit.
There's always an embarrassment clause. Anything that'll embarrass the department.
Right. Okay, so this asshole is actually trying to get a court order so he can get the freaking info on the people that were involved in this page so that anyone who's involved in this page that's on his department, he can fucking burn.
Yeah, it's sad, but I mean, you know, we've gone past a day and age where we're done in the report writing room, roll call room, locker room, wherever. And you're burning people, you know, for, you know, silly little jokes you print out on, you know, Photoshop or whatever and plastering them up. Those days have gone. And, you know, at the age of social media, they kind of started trying to bring that back and putting that online, and people got upset, butthurt, whatever you may want to call it. And maybe a little bit it went past a little bit of, you know, just ribbing.
Sure.
But at the same time, you know, it's kind of part of being on this job. I mean, fire does it, military does it, and I can attest to the military.
You need it.
Do it.
You decompress. You need it. Yeah. So, Chris, you have your own podcast, correct?
Yeah, I have a podcast called The Fallen Not Forgotten Podcast. It's part of my nonprofit. I've always wanted to do it, but with COVID, so the plan for 2020 was to rebrand, rename, and rescale my nonprofit. But of course, with COVID, that didn't happen. But, you know, some of the things I was able to do was to start the podcast. So it's really brand new. I haven't started marketing yet. I'm really getting putting some feelers out there. People are really liking it. some really heavy stuff, but some really important, valuable stuff from survivors or family of fallen officers, what they've been through, the dark places they went to when their family or friend was killed in line of duty, how they got out of it, what they learned over the years. So as sad as it can be, it's extremely helpful because we're we have over 100, without COVID, between 100, 150 fallen officers per year. So for this to get out there when people are in those dark places, I think could be tremendously valuable. So
it's pretty dark right now anyway, so people can use all the help getting out of dark places they can.
Yeah, for sure.
So you were involved, are still involved in law enforcement,
active, still active, been on patrol pretty much my whole career. I have over 16 years on. I think I only did a year and a month out of patrol, and all three times were not my decision. So I did two specialized units. One was crime suppression. One was a robbery crime suppression. They were fun, but I was assigned. And then I did 1 month as a detective lone, and I begged them to put me back on the streets.
Do you like pushing a black and white?
It's a different world up in detective. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I enjoyed being a detective only because I was working narcs. I don't know that I would have enjoyed being a detective. There's no way. We had a really good financial crimes guy. There is no flipping way that I would have ever done well or ever wanted to go into like financial crimes, that kind of stuff.
Oh, no, never.
Yeah. Crimes against people, like person crimes, like rape, robbery, that kind of thing. Okay. I could maybe get into that. But as soon as you get into sex crimes, then you're dealing with the kid stuff. And now I'm back out. I can't. I didn't trust.
You know, it's a different kind of justice up there. You have a different pull, a different power to really get justice done. Something you don't have on patrol. So, you know, if anything ever happens where, you know, I need to go inside, see how that work can be very fulfilling, but you have to be really organized. And if I turn this camera around, you'll see how unorganized I am. If you're not organized, it's a tough job. And I had post-its everywhere. I had dreams of post-its of everything I had to do.
I keep myself organized through a complicated series of post-it notes. That's how I keep myself organized.
Color-coded.
I have to have dynamic environment. That's why narcs work, because we're always doing something different, you know. But that keeps your interest. Patrol keeps your interest because you're always doing something different. You know,
always something different.
Yeah. But chasing down like financial crimes and going through bank statements and, you know, all that kind of forensic accounting and I'm out. And God bless the cops that can do it.
I got to tell you though, there's something about throwing on those lights and that code 3 equipment and punching it, not knowing what you're going to get. And the information is still rolling out. It just hits a different way than sitting back and responding to something later. I mean, patrol is, and you know, Chris, he's a copper's cop. I mean, this guy, I mean, if you follow him, I started following him on his Instagram or whatever, and he dedicates every shift, nearly every shift that he works, to a fallen officer or that fallen officer's family. And it speaks, you know, volumes. And I think it's a great thing what he's doing, and it's awesome, and it's good to see that, and it makes me feel good. And you know, he's just great.
Yeah. Well, Chris, we're glad to have you. And we had talked about this, because if you're listening to this and you're not a War Stories listener, by all means, you should come over and listen to War Stories. But you might be listening to this on Chris's podcast, because we discussed it. And I'll go ahead and send you the audio of our episode with you so that you can release this episode on your feed. And we'll do it again at the end. But why don't you give the name of your nonprofit and your podcast out right now, and we'll tag back up at the end just so our listeners can hopefully go check you out.
Very cool. The nonprofit, I just renamed and rebranded, but right now it's Blue Coat Foundation. You might also find it under Blue Cult Music, which is where I originally started it at. But right now it's Blue Cult Foundation, and the podcast is the Fallen But Not Forgotten podcast. Mm-hmm. And I also have a blog, because I like to write. I can't say I'm a writer, but I love to write. And I write a blog. It's Four Cops. And that's called, why don't I remember? It's called Burden Beyond the Badge. It's its own website.
You cut out a little bit.
It's all attached to the nonprofit.
You cut out a little bit when you're naming the blog. Go ahead.
Burden Beyond the Badge.
Got it. Okay, great.
Yeah.
So you're here with us for an episode of War Stories. And for your listeners, this is basically police officers, firefighters, and veterans getting together to tell the stories that we don't typically talk about with anybody else who hasn't kind of been there, done that. So, Chuck and myself have certainly been there, done that. So, Chris, the floor is yours, man. What's your story?
Man, I was trying to think of stories, and there's so many, and some of them are like, well, I can't tell that one. Nothing illegal, obviously, but just stuff that public's not ready to hear.
Like, well, some stories are too personal, and other stories you're like, yeah, people don't understand that.
Yeah. A little embarrassing. All right, well, I'll let you guys decide. You guys want to hear the shit story, the perfect pit, or the guy that felt no pain?
Well, I'm always down for a shit story, but
I was about to say, let's hear the shit, but
but a guy that felt no pain is a good place to start. So let's start there.
It was literally a windy, cold, rainy, windy morning.
Oh, here we go. It was the darkest day.
Day watch. I promise it was rainy. And call comes out in our area, but we're still in the roll call line getting our equipment. So we just kind of rush out of there. Everybody else is taking their time to go to it, obviously. And so as we're headed over there, we're not driving fast because of the rain, and the call, more details come out. So it ends up being a 211, a robbery. Apparently somebody's robbing somebody of their puppy. So as we go up the hill, we see
it comes out as robbery of a puppy.
Yeah.
It's Lady Gaga's dog walker or something.
No, this is years ago. So it's weird, because as we rolled up, some lady's like, she uses the whole body of the elements to describe what's going on. She goes, "It's happening over there. He's using force or fear to take their dog." I'm like, "What is this IA? What the heck's going on?" So that
made it a little more like, why are you using criminal elements to describe this to me?
Yeah, it was weird. So as we roll up, we see three people kind of nonchalant talking. The from my vantage point, the van is kind of covering the suspect. He's actually just in his underwear. Couldn't tell that at that exact moment. It looks like they're just hanging out talking. So we don't jump out with too much excitement. But as we get closer, like, the guy who's naked is holding this kid kind of by the neck area. And there's a girl there who's pointing and saying, "Help, help." And we're like, "Hey, you okay?" And then the kid who's being held by the neck is like, shakes his head no. And he has his dog. So we tell them to, "Hey, get out the way, get out the way." And we're like, hey, man, turn around, whatever, you know, put your hands top of your head. And he's not listening. So we start shadowing him on the
street. Does he even register your presence?
He knows we're there.
Okay.
He knows we're there. And we start shadowing him. And then he just starts running at us. And we hit him with a taser. Bare chest. Two prongs, bare chest. I guess we should have had a wider hit. But he stared at his chest. And he ripped him out.
Right.
I keep shadowing him.
As they do.
He kneels down next to Yeah, because it always works, right? He did not feel pain.
Right. Why didn't you tase him?
He kneels down and next to a tire well, and there's condensation on the car, and he starts writing with his finger on the condensation. And he says, "Dear God, give me the strength to fuck these officers up."
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
That's a lot to write.
Comes back
at us. Frosty window.
he comes back at us. Baton strikes. And he just kind of stares where I hit him. And he backs up, starts rambling. We try to grab him and try to do contact tase, and he just kind of looks at us and pretty much shakes us off. I don't know when the help call came out, but I think after the second volley of baton strikes, my partner was like, this is not good. So people are looking at us. Now there's a crowd. And I think there was a third volley. I can or can't say if there was a third volley of baton strikes, but he wasn't feeling anything. So I'm like, hey, partner, we literally have time to talk. Like, what do you want to do? Like, OC? He's like, OC's not going to work. Like, just take him down. He goes, no, we need to wait. Because if he feels no pain, so my partner, he takes his gun out. And he said, we're just going to shadow. He feels no pain. My partner's reasoning was, if we get down on the ground with this guy and he's biting or doing anything, he feels no pain, we're gonna get hurt,
right?
So
that's essentially gun. Yeah, that's essentially what people think of as super strength with PCP. It's not right. Super strength, it's the inability to feel pain,
right? So I wasn't thinking along those lines. I was thinking, I work out, how come my baton strikes are not working?
Right.
But my partner had the good mindset to think, no, we're just gonna shadow. If he goes to anybody else or if he attacks us and we're on the ground, I'm gonna have to do what I gotta do. I said, all right, good to go. So the troops come, he gets tased again, rips him out again, then he starts getting hit with the beanbag, two beanbags fully unloaded on his chest, boom 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 boom. He's just looking at his chest. And he just starts running. The officers try to grab him. He goes right past him. Finally, he gets tased on the back, and he's trying to reach it, but he can't reach his back, so his muscles tighten up, and he falls down. So we grab him. But, I've never – it was very helpless those first 4 minutes with nobody there, but my partner with nothing that worked. I'm glad my partner slowed me down because I was ready to go hands on, and you could have got seriously hurt. He doesn't feel any pain. And that's all maturity and working with guys or girls who have been through it. And that's what you guys have partners for,
Mm-hmm, to check you, slow you down.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. To remind you, you're not Superman, So.
And, with somebody like that, a swarm technique is effective.
Yeah. Team takedown.
If you don't, if two people does not a swarm make, no. So
two beads don't equal a swarm. That's
for sure. Yeah, exactly. So I can only imagine how it would have gone completely sideways if you especially if he didn't check you, but also if then he goes down that same road where he's doing the same thing, and now you're both just going to get screwed. This guy's going to tattoo you both up one side and down the other.
For sure. I think that's the importance of a partnership is, if one person has tunnel vision, the other person got to snap them out of it. And I've been on both sides, so we're not perfect.
I remember the first time I ever hit somebody with my ass. And it was that holy shit moment where, you whack them and then it kind of goes back. When you see the cartoons and somebody hits, something hard with a crowbar and the crowbar vibrates and goes, doy, 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 doy.
Yeah.
And hit somebody with the ass and it's just, doink, it bounces off and kind of shakes and you realize that that's not going to work.
On probation, I had a training officer told me, why the hell do you carry that thing? So I took it off. He goes, no, leave it on. You're going to use it this month and it's not going to work. And I'm going to let the guy kick your ass. So I used it. It didn't work. He didn't let the guy kick my ass, but it didn't work.
Yeah. So I switched to a wood straight stick right after
that. I have it in my war bag to I don't know.
Only reason why I keep mine on is one, in case I get into a categorical, that way I'm covered for all my equipment.
Yeah. God forbid you shoot somebody and don't have your ASP on you.
Yeah. So, you know, what's interesting is I've had that same argument, and I've mentioned it to people now, and it, with young guys like you, it seems to have caught on a little bit better, but I would
say guys like me.
Yeah.
All right.
You guys like the same age.
Oh, are we? Yeah. He looks way younger than I do. That's, you know,
because you have a beard.
Oh, that's true. And I have gray.
He moisturizes though.
Yeah, that's true too. So anyway, I would tell them I had partners that didn't carry pepper spray. And I carried it. I carried the small can, but I carried it. And I basically said it's for, you know, dogs, right? But what I told them is, I said, you don't want to smoke somebody and then get up on the stand and they say, well, where was your pepper spray? You go, I don't carry it. Oh, so you didn't have pepper spray available to pepper spray him. Well, yeah, correct. But it wouldn't have mattered. Pepper spray wouldn't have worked. Aha. But how do you know? You know, it's that trap of you know, because you didn't even have the option. So having the option there and then saying, no, I had the option and I knew it wouldn't work, fucker.
Actually, I never take my PR24 off. Even when I sit down, when I jump fences, it's always on.
Yeah.
It's always on. That's another training officer who, what's the word? Scared me shitless, made sure I had it on me at all times.
Right.
Yeah, so it's always on.
So now we got to hear the shit story.
You want to hear the shit?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
I'll tell you another one once we're stopped recording, but I could tell you this one. This one's a good one. Okay. Let's see. We get a call of somebody threatening to shoot the president with an AK-47 at the McDonald's. They watch again, daytime.
First question, was the president at McDonald's?
Well, we didn't have enough info at the time. We don't know. Maybe. So... we're headed over there. Thank goodness I wasn't the primary unit.
Don't you love that when you get to go play, but you don't have to do any paper? Or is it, you're just like, what do you want to do? I'll be more than play.
Or something like this for sure. So this lady, this 5150 homeless, I've seen her many times. You know, poor thing, actually, right? She's just not all there, and she's homeless. But she's yelling, I'm going to kill the president. I'm going to kill the president. She's like, you know, making hand gestures. We're like, okay, this is what we got. big lady. But she has, she handcuffed herself to a big, heavy luggage. I don't think there's AK in there, whatever, right? So now you have a bunch of cops around her. Like, calm down, man. We just want, you know, we're going to talk to you, you know. She's like, no. She turns around, her back faces towards us. And then she lifts her shirt. We can't see her front waistband. And she puts her hands in her waistbands. Now the guns come out.
Right.
No guns were out before that. And now all the guns are out. Like, what the heck? And she starts rubbing herself. Like, pretty, like. Pretty
vigorously?
Vigorously is the word.
Oh, shit. It was a sternum rub. A little too low, but a sternum rub.
She brings out two handfuls of shit and starts caking her face with it.
Oh, fuck.
She does it two or three times.
Oh.
Just caking.
I would have thrown up.
She's just caking it. So I look around and there are tons of cell phones pointing at us. I'm like, oh my God, if she wasn't handcuffed to that luggage and she runs after us, I'm running. There would have been a bunch of video of this lady in pursuit of coppers with a bunch of shit in her hand. Can you shoot? I don't know. Can you? You decide.
Fucking biohazard. That's gross.
Yeah. You can get pink eye for sure. That shit.
It was like totally caked on her. Like you could see the chunks. And I don't know how.
Eat corn?
I don't need a description of it.
Ladies and gentlemen, Chuck.
How quickly flies know. Flies were on her in like half a second.
I'm gonna go out on a limb and say flies were already on her.
Possibly.
At least in her general vicinity.
She starts gagging and she puts herself on the ground. She can't take it.
Damn.
I look around and there's a couple of P1s there, a couple of probationers, you know, and I'm like, all right, I'm glad this is not me. Ambulance gets there and you're like, you got a crime? Like, no, they got to take her. They just put drapes over her and they put a mask on way before COVID. And I was out. They put her in the ambulance and that was it. Yeah, you're welcome.
At what point, though, I mean, like, I could just imagine if she goes in her pants and she pulls out handfuls of shit. Because first of all, I mean, was it there already?
I don't know. She did it 2 or 3 times, and each time was just a massive pile.
Or did she just, did she create more and then go get it, like, each time? Or was there just a, anyway, I don't think I need the answer. But
I don't know, and I think, why would you reach it? I guess you could scoop it from the front. Anyway.
Yeah, but then the point at which she's 51-49 and a half and starts rubbing it on her face, but she puts herself on the ground because she can't take it. I'm like, I'm thinking of that moment where, crazy as she is, the shit actually gets on her face and she goes, you know, this is a bad idea. I'm just going to lay down and let them wash me off.
That was horrible.
It was bad.
How did it smell?
Oh, I didn't smell it. I would have thrown up.
Oh, you couldn't smell from where you were standing?
Yeah, I was like fourth unit there. I didn't need to be there.
You're just like, I'll let the boot stay up there.
Yeah, you want to take this one for
sure? There's plenty of training officers with probationers.
Yeah.
That's that P2 dog luxury, you know?
No, not at all.
That's when, as a boot, you pray that there was another boot that fucked up worse than you that morning. Because if you pissed your FTO off that morning and then you showed up, you were going to buy that call and he was going to make you clean it up. Unless some other boot had screwed his FTO over worse.
He got handcuffed, so I'm sure they threw it away. I would have thrown those cuffs away.
That's fucking gross, man.
There you go. How's that for a war story?
Yeah.
I reused the cuffs. I mean, I'm a cheap son of a bitch, so I had to hose that son of the bitches off and be like, hey, we're good.
A little simple green?
Fuck it.
Oh man, that reminds me of I'm gonna kind of preview one of our upcoming episodes is two of my old partners, right? And we loved working together. We all came out of the academy within 6 months of each other. We all got off FTO within 6 months of each other, and we just loved working together. We'd do summer graveyards all summer long and just hook and book, right? Well, at one point, Adam, you guys, he's been on the show. He took 4 rounds of 357 at point blank. It was pretty intense. But one night, Adam, and we'll tell the story in depth when he gets on the show, but basically he lured me over to his car because I could hear when I was getting into work for swing shift, he was, you know, already working. So he takes this girl. She was at the gas station and she's an F. So for those of you who don't know what that means in California, it's drunk in public. And he brings her, I can hear her screaming in the background. And he goes, you know, one in custody, female, time and mileage. I'm headed to the station. He gets back to the station. He goes, hey, can you watch her for me? I said, what do you got? He goes, oh, this blonde chick with fake tits was running around the gas station. You know, you should check her out. And I'm like, really? He goes, yeah, she was pulling her dress off at the gas station. Da, 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 da. And so I'm watching his prisoner and he turns the dome light on and walks away. And I see that she's like 60 and like leathery. It was like something about Mary time, only she thought she was. And she was like, her dress was hiked down and hiked up. So it was just a belt at that point. And she had her legs up on the partition and she had one leg on the left side and one leg on the right side. And she's screaming and screaming. And I'm like, I looked at him all, you fucker, you knew she was old and naked? And he's like, yep, you're welcome. And he just walks in the station. Oh, he was paying me back for something I had done to him.
much earlier. So
wow.
Yeah, some of the stuff is just
unseeable.
Yeah, my friends and family who I try to tell the stories to, I don't think they realize how much craziness is out there, how much violence is out there, how often it happens. You know, they think once in a while that happens every day. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah.
We become so desensitized to it, or it's just like it's normal for us. So we're like, oh, this happened today. And we're just like, nothing really happened. And I really didn't understand that until I got with the person I'm with now. You know, Rachel, she's my current, you know, baby mama, which I love very much. And she'll never listen to this. So.
Oh, I see.
But, you know, so she asked me one day, she's like, well, do you see a lot of dead people? And I was like, I mean, I guess. I mean, like, not really. And she's like, well, how many dead people have you seen? I was like, oh, I don't know. I can't count. And she's like, well, have you seen any this month? I'm like, yeah, like six. she's like, oh, that's not normal, and that's a lot. And I was like, well, not really. I mean, it could be more. I mean, I really kind of hid from some calls because I didn't want to go see another dead person. But, you know, it could have been more. And she's like, no, that's kind of not right. And I started thinking about it. I was like, well, man, I've been doing this for kind of an okay amount of time, you know, almost a decade. And it really kind of just, I started thinking about it. I'm like, wow, you know, we really deal with a lot of stuff that we have gotten so used to and so, like, I guess desensitized to, but it's just almost normal for us where we don't even think about it, which really makes us a different person, a different type of personality, a different sense of humor, you know. And you really see it when you don't hang out with your copper friends and you go to, like, let's say, like a family function, or you try to tell the story to them and they're just like, something's wrong with you.
Yeah. Right. You know? Sorry. My microphone is working again, but you're right. That's 100%. It is. You don't realize you're fucked up until a normal person tells you, you know, that's not normal. Right.
Yeah.
But you know, what's funny is because my dad was a cop, your dad was a cop. Like, I was raised in a household where it was normal. So even then, like, my FTO used to joke that I came out of the training car with two hash marks on my sleeve, just because, you know, it was kind of like been there, done that. Nothing, he said, nothing phased me. And then I remember having guys that would throw up, or they couldn't, they come out of a house and they were disgusted by something, or you'd try to smoke and joke, and they just couldn't wrap their mind around what had just happened. They're like, oh my God, how? And I'm like, what?
I mean, I've seen P1s, I mean, you know, probationers quit after seeing their first suicide. I mean, it's you know, they're just not ready for it. But fuck, my dad was CHP and CHP, whatever. But he's seen a lot of dead people, right?
Oh, yeah, they see a lot of dead people. Crashes, dude.
I'm telling you, the crashes that they have come home and the stories he's told me, I'm like, dude, if I never have to see a quarter of the shit that you've seen, I'll be just fine. Like, it's just disgusting. And I used to spend the Saturday mornings with my dad when I didn't have anybody to watch me. He had to work on the weekend. There was no one to watch me. I would spend all day at, you know, the Antelope Valley station for CHP in his roll call room, looking at old Mad video or Mad videos.
Yeah, right. VHS. Red asphalt.
Yeah, red asphalt. You know, and these storyboards that they had made, like some you know, fourth graders diorama project of just dead people.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, oh, that's cool. What happened to that one? And he's like, oh, funny story. That guy, I was drunk and tried to get out of the car while I was going 40 miles an hour and ran himself over.
Oh cool. What? Right. Yeah,
I can't do dead bodies anymore. I'm getting softer. I used to take pictures of them and everything. And I think that what did it for me was one of the bodies, what didn't move on me, but like, we're not supposed to go handle a dead body investigation by yourself as an L car. Right. But for some reason I did, it was Watch 3 and Graveyards. And I was looking for this guy's ID and I saw his wallet in his back pocket. So I moved the sheets. And as I moved the sheets, his eyes were open and he was stiff, and I found out later, right? He tilted, but air came out of his Sound like he went like that.
Zombie!
I
why does this stopped. Heart attack have a gunshot wound to the head?
Yeah, I know. I became like numb. I just walked out slowly. I just paused my brain. I called the supervisor and I told him the story. My sergeant was laughing hysterically. It was anyway, he was laughing hysterically. And he's like, "You dummy, you're not even supposed to be at these by yourself." You know, like,
you're here now.
Yeah, like, I'm not going back in there. But I think ever since then, like, I can't really deal with the bad stinkers anymore. And I've been lucky to have some good partners who go in there for me. But yeah, I can't
the smell, no, like that, the worse they smell, the harder it is. Like that's just 100%. Like,
oh, I refuse. Dude, I will stand my ass outside and be like,
sometimes, what if there's nobody else, you know? I was second on stink, and we knew that it was going to be a dead body, but we had to clear it. And I gagged. My buddy behind me like pat me on the back, like, "Come on, senior, just go outside." Like, I turned around. Right. I got to test myself again. I don't know. We're gonna get plenty of them, you know. So we'll see how
the next. So, do you guys remember the movie The Rock? There's a scene where Nicolas Cage is diffusing one of the chemical weapons, and they had just dropped something on a bad guy's head. I want to say it was like an air conditioner or something, microwave. I don't remember. Anyway, crushed the guy's head, but as he's diffusing the bomb, the guy's body is twitching, right? And right. And then at one point, while the body's twitching, he looks at Sean Connery and he goes, "You've been around a lot of dead people. Is that normal?" Yeah. Right. And I've had those moments. I remember going on, so we had a group home, all of the waterheads who were, you know, weren't living at home, but they were too non-functional to live on their own. They lived in this group home, and somehow the staff was like Swiss cheese security, because these guys would get drugs, you know, and whatever they wanted. Right. So we go in there, and one of the residents had died, and he, you know, he was like a cockroach, you know, his hands had curled up at his chest from the, you know, the what do they call it? I can't remember. No, it was before that. It's when you start to die and you're the medics told me what it is. Oh, posturing. That's what it is. Posturing. And, so he's laying there, he's dead, he's postured and he's in full rigor. And I call the deputy. Deputy comes out to do the death investigation, because they're the coroners. And as I'm looking at this dude, foam starts to come out of his nose, right? A little bit. It looks like he has a piece of cotton in his nose. And I'm like, oh, it grows and grows. Then it starts to come out the other nostril. And seriously, like a bubble bath or, you know, something, he just has this thick white foam coming out his nose. And it was that moment for me where I'm like, you've been around a lot of dead bodies. Is that normal? Well, he's foaming up. Do we need to run? And he goes, no, that's, you know, opiate overdose. That's common. If, you know, the lungs are now filling up with mucus and air and all this other stuff, fluid. So it just starts to bubble out of the lungs as foam. And now I was like, oh, all right. And then it was no big deal, but that did fucking freak me out a little bit at first. I'm like, why is that dead body foaming up like Mr. Bubble?
Yeah, that's gross. That's weird.
So
yeah, I mean, we could talk about these all day, because I've had one that popped as we hit the door.
Fuck.
Oh, because the gas was trapped inside.
Yeah. So I was a P1. But they had another P1 go up the ladder, the FD's ladder, you know, because he had the gun. He looked inside and he's like, yeah, you know, dead guy right by the door, big guy. He couldn't get in through the window, so we had to push it open, and he popped.
Oh,
it was weird. I mean, the smell and the stuff that came out, it almost, that's when I was a lot younger, so I was like, cool, let me see this, you know. Right. Now I can't, but like literally, like, I don't know how you want to edit this later or not, but I mean the whole face was eaten out by magic. Yeah. It looked like a movie prop.
Yeah.
It didn't look real.
No, that's the thing. There comes a point at which it doesn't look real anymore.
Yeah, it looks because
their skin turns a waxy. It's almost like a plastic.
Yeah. Yeah, the waxy skin and the I've never had one pop. I had one fart. We rolled it over to look underneath it, and as we rolled it over, it went, and then the whole room filled up with the worst fart smell you've ever heard. I've had one fart, but I've never had one pop on me.
Have you ever had one shit a whole piece of cauliflower out?
No.
We had a welfare check on some guy, some poor old man. I mean, fucking God bless this man. I feel so bad for him. The way he went out was just fucking horrific. But
right.
So he was going to church every Sunday, and he'd just been starting to go to church, and this young thing who was taking him to church all the time.
Atta boy.
I'm like every Sunday or so, or Friday or whenever they went to their church mass. And she would come pick him up. Well, she came to pick him up the previous week, and no answer. So she's like, well, that's weird. Well, maybe he just didn't want to this week. Next week, he is not answering phone calls. He doesn't answer his door. She calls us. We're like, okay. When we get there, the door's open. We're like, well, the door's open. She's like, yeah, I ended up getting the key and opened it. I think he's dead. And I was like, oh, okay. So the welfare check turned into dead body investigation real quick. We walk inside, and he had probably been dead for about, I don't know, a few days. But it was cool in there. The AC was on, so no bad smell. He was just kind of like mummifying. I don't know. But there was dried blood all over the bathroom, and it was streaked down from his hands. I look over into his room, which is just adjacent, and he had a Vivid DVD playing. But it was on the start screen. And if we know what Vivid is, it's a major Hollywood, you know, or North Hollywood.
Oh, I thought you were just describing it as a Vivid.
Gotcha. Yeah, as a Vivid porn. Yeah. So he had a.
Yeah, no, it wasn't a Vivid, like, oh, it's really colorful. No, it was.
You see it porn playing, but it was on the start screen. And I was like, oh, interesting. Oh, I was like, well, maybe he rubbed one out too hard and passed out and died and hit his head and fucking bled out. And so we go in there and we look, and his Depends are at his ankles, and his toilet's open, and then I look at his feet, and his feet are pushing into the ground. It almost looked like a pterodactyl, like talons and fucking feet, and like just mummified and long, skinny, bony feet, and it's disgusting. And I felt so bad looking at it, but so disgusted. And he was pushing so hard that his bones and shit had stretched. And there was blood. I guess he hit his head. I'm assuming he masturbated, bought the nut, went to the bathroom, went to go to the bathroom, stood up, got lightheaded, fell, hit the metal railing, fell into the tub, started bleeding profusely because he's probably on blood thinners, and started slipping on the edge of the tub, leaving streak marks, and that's the way he died. And then I looked down in between his feet, and there was a whole flowerette of cauliflower with shit streaked down the sides.
Oh, man.
Perfectly sitting in between his legs.
Oh, that's a rough way to... I mean, man, you don't expect that to happen. Right.
It was whole.
So you were just confused at that point.
I was confused a little bit. I was like, how did that get there? Like, it's whole. It's not chewed. Like, it's a one big old piece. It was thick.
Well, clearly he didn't have the most healthiest of habits.
No, I felt bad for him, but, you know, at least, I mean, he was watching something fun before he went.
It's irony of ironies is my wife has a friend who's a sheriff's deputy, and she had her boobs done when she was, you know, younger gal. And she went to this well-known doctor in the area that was the same doctor that my wife went to. And lo and behold, probably at least a decade or 15 years later, she calls my wife and she says, oh my God, you'll never guess what just happened. She says, what? She says, I just went on a dead body call, and it was our breast implant doctor. It was our plastic surgeon. And she's like, wait, what? She goes, yeah, I went on the dead body call, and the dead body was our plastic surgeon. And you'll never guess where he was. He was in a secret apartment that his family didn't know about, where he used sex toys and watched porn.
What?
So apparently homeboy went out in his sex apartment doing some freaky deaky stuff in his little secret sex toy box. And then, like, at that point, that's just shitty luck. You're like, oh man, one of these chicks is one of the ladies I did plastic surgery on is the one that happens to find you all fucking perverted and kinky like that, dead.
Wow.
So, well, so I wanted to talk about our emails a little bit because we have them stacked up, but Chuck, we've talked about this and we've got somebody lined up. We're going to do an episode because a lot of these emails kind of deal with the same thing. I want to get into law enforcement. I want to know about the oral board process. What advice do you have for me? So basically we're going to do an episode where we're going to give you, I guess we're going to answer all those questions by discussing the process and discussing things that you can do to help it, things that you can do to fuck it up and not realize it. Kind of some rules for the oral board, you know, that you maybe don't think about because you get nervous or whatever. But these are kind of some tips and tricks to help you through it. So we're going to do a whole episode on that. So I'm not reading those emails because we're getting to that episode. And then we've got some other emails. We have a listener, his name is Eric. So I wanted to see if you guys had any thoughts on this. Hey there, guys. My name is Eric. I'm 25 years old and I'm from Kansas. And first off, just wanted to say I love the podcast. Found it on Spotify a couple of weeks ago. And I'm working on getting all caught up. The stories are always amazing. And I always find myself laughing out loud. Well, thank you. Now to get to it. I'm a civilian, but I do have a CCL. I'm assuming that's concealed carry license.
I think so. Yeah.
And I'd love to hear something about that on the podcast. I do apologize. I'm not really bringing a story or anything, just more of a question in some way, but I wasn't sure how you could bring it up. If you guys are great, and I know you would be a crew to figure out a way. So we're just going to read your email and that's how we're bringing it up. How's that? So he wants to, like, if there was anybody out there who used a firearm in self-defense, you could bring a story or even self-defense incidents you've encountered as an LEO. What would be some good tips that you could give to someone who could find themselves in a situation from the perspective of a law enforcement officer? So his question really is about using his CCW or using force in a civilian capacity in self-defense and what our experiences as law enforcement are with that and what maybe are some tips or things to be aware of for somebody who maybe has a concealed carry license or might have to use force in self-defense and what they should then do in dealing with law enforcement. Now, have you, either one of you guys ever been on a legit self-defense shooting where somebody had a CCW or somebody was in their house or somebody, you know what I mean?
House, but not like, not like
not in the public. The street, no. Okay. So what, house. So the house one,
no, the, it's either business or house.
The shooter was in their house. The person was in their house. Somebody broke in. They shot the intruder is what I'm.
Or security guards.
Security guards. Okay.
Or tried to shoot at the intruder, but didn't have very, very good aim, you know, sight alignment, trigger control and missed.
Okay. So for me, my biggest thing is that, you know, first of all, put your hands up. Like, that's the first rule. When the cops point a gun at you and tell you to comply, just comply. You can argue about it later. And guess what? If we're wrong and you're not the right person, we'll pick you up, dust you off, tell you we're sorry, and send you on your merry way. Mm-hmm. But there's so many people that could avoid bad shit happening to them if they realize that when we tell you to do something, just do it.
And people get things wrong when they call in. People confuse things. Sometimes our dispatchers, in any type of agency out here in California, get so much information at one point in time that they may confuse certain things, you know. And I've had to use my weapon off duty, you know, and I knew from being law enforcement, knew that this can happen and that dispatchers can fuck things up sometimes, and because they have a really hard job. But at the same time, we get flustered, they get flustered. It's very easy to mistake things or to mess up some sort of description.
Yeah, it's a really hard job, by the way.
It is very hard. It's so super stressful. I would never want to do it.
Nope.
I can't type that fast. And I hear them getting frustrated all the time, and I feel so bad for them. But at the same time, they're going to make mistakes. I've seen it constantly, yep. Especially when they're learning. So I had to give them my description multiple times. I am armed. This is what I'm wearing. No, really, this is what I'm wearing. I don't want to get shot. I'm holding a house. I have my gun out. There's an audible alarm going on. I hear people inside. Like, I need this. This is what I have. And I have to continuously give that. But I was ready if the deputies got there and they said, hey, put your fucking hands up. I'm like, all right, I'm armed. I'm putting that down. And I would, you know, let them do what they had to do. And I would listen to them. I'm not going to just, you know, be like, oh, fuck you. I'm a cop. I don't want to get shot. I mean, I have friends that are on the sheriff's department, and they run force option simulation, like a lot of other agencies in the United States do and in California, which is basically like a video game. A lot of agencies do it. And they have run numerous scenarios where they have an off-duty shooting where it's a cop and they end up shooting the cop.
Oh, yeah. It happens. I was an instructor for the state of California in advanced officer safety and field tactics. And one of my jobs was to be the bad guy in these simunitions training scenarios. So, you know, you put me in suspect clothes and a face mask and some gloves, and I may or may not be armed. I may or may not have a gun. I may, you know, whatever. You have to contact me like anybody else. And we had different scenarios we'd put people through. And one of them was they get dispatched to shots fired, man with a gun. And when they get there, what they don't know is that I have in one hand, I have a firearm, and in my other hand, I have my badge. And the scenario is such that I will turn towards them with both the badge and the gun at the same time, right? And then the question is, do I get shot, right? And I can tell you 99 times out of 100, I get shot, right? And part of it's my own fault. And the scenario is written that way because as I turn with my badge and my gun. You should never turn your gun, just turn your badge, right?
Yeah, if anything, holster it or put it on the ground.
Yeah.
Once you're done using it, I mean, unless you're holding someone on the ground and they are still fucking moving, and you're trying to get them help or whatever, and you can hold, you have to verify, you know, be verbal at what you have. Hey, friendly, like whatever you got to do, but understand that we don't know you. We don't know who you are. You don't have a badge. If you do have a badge, fucking say something. If you don't, we're going to tell you to drop that. We're going to handcuff you and we're going to dust your ass off later, but we need to figure out what we have. And don't get offended if we have to put hooks on you, because if we put hooks on you, it's for our safety, your safety.
Yeah. I don't know you.
Yeah. I mean, you put it on the ground, listen, put your hands up. Don't back talk. Just do what you got to do. And, you know, or holster. If the guy's dead on the ground and you ended up shooting him and you're in your house, secure the weapon. Put it back in the safe. I don't know. Put it on the ground. Don't fucking touch it.
Yeah. If you don't have to have it in your hands when law enforcement gets there, don't.
I think like.
Go ahead, Chris.
A lot of those that advice is great for like if you're at home and stuff like that. But I think the best advice is unless it's life or death, literally. And you're not like with your kids or things like that.
Yeah, I can tell you horror stories about that.
Like, don't just be a good wit. That's the biggest thing. Because when you think about why do we practice tactics, it's because we are always on the lag side of things. We're always reacting. So our tactics close that time span of our reaction as best we can, but we will always be a step behind. Given that we have a partner, we have ammunition, we have a bulletproof vest, we have a radio to call a freaking helicopter if we need to. When you're out there, whether you're a off-duty cop or just somebody who has a CCW license, you don't have none of that. So not only are you have none of those tactics, you don't have none of the reinforcements, you know, you don't know if your gun's going to jam, like you have nothing. So unless you have to save a life, yours or somebody else's, and even then, you know, if you're with your two kids, you cannot take action. You have to be good with. I mean, you know, cops go through 7-8 months of the academy. a year of probation and years of just training on the streets before they even kind of really understand that concept really well. Mm-hmm. So for a civilian to wonder, what if that happens? I really think that needs a lot more training than just to, you know,
you gotta be careful. A CCW to me means somebody is about to shove a knife in you or your wife or, you know, something like that. Like, CCWs to me are not about, you know, robberies and stuff like that. Because, hey, I can tell you what, as a cop, there might be times where I would be in a bank. I mean, nobody goes in a bank anymore, but when we did, there might have been times where I was in a bank and I might not have done anything if the bank was being robbed because I could see the situation would be only aggravated by me, you know, drawing down and trying to take this guy into custody by myself inside a bank with a bunch of civilians around. So you're right. In those scenarios, it's just money. Be a good witness.
Right. And I don't want to, these words to get like if I get an off-duty shooting tomorrow and they use this podcast to like twist my words or anything, but in all the scenarios I play in my head as practice, I tell myself if I'm drawing out, I'm drawing out to shoot, not to prone somebody out off duty. If I'm drawing out,
right,
this guy's getting blasted.
Right.
I'm not drawing out to let me catch the bad guy today.
Right. I'm not going to be putting my, yeah, exactly. My gun is not there to go on duty and take enforcement action.
You don't have hooks. Yeah. I mean, what are you going to do?
What are you going
to
do?
Yeah. Then you can take it and he's going to have time and opportunity to.
You'd be surprised how many coppers do that, man. It's scary.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, Chris, I'm sure you've seen the video. It was about that off. I think it was a sheriff. He was off duty and we saw it in the academy and I'm sure you've seen it. Where he was out with his daughter.
Yep.
Out at some sort of, I think it was a store, like a food store,
grocery store, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, and he goes out there and he sees a robbery suspects walking with his daughter. He takes his daughter to the car, puts her behind the wheel of the car. He comes back. I think he has a revolver. He comes out. They come out. He identifies themselves. They get into a shooting. He puts the suspect down. Suspect fires around, goes through the car, hits his daughter, kills his daughter, and he is the one giving the training on the video of off-duty tactics. And if you're going to pull your gun out, you're going to pull it out to use it, but you need to make sure you don't have your family or whatever with you. And if you do, this is what could happen.
Yeah. My old man knew a guy who was in a stop and rob and somebody tried to stick it up when he and his wife were, my dad's friend and his wife were on their way home from a dinner, stopping off to get a bottle of wine or something. And so he decides to take action. And his wife gets shot and killed.
I mean, it can happen. I mean, I was with my son one day, and we were at the Stater Brothers, and I saw a robbery go down, an Estes robbery. I mean, they straight up like 44 turns into a robbery because they kicked the shit out of the manager outside,
right,
to get away, and they hopped in the car, and I was like, "There's nothing I can do." I mean, my son's like, "Are you going to get him?" I was like, "I can't, buddy. Like,
I've got you with me."
Another car came up out of nowhere and it was a layoff vehicle. Two guys get out, kick the dude kick the manager and the manager flies off and, you know, they get up and they take off. I'm like, so if I would have gone up there, not known about the layoff car, come up, try to take this person into custody. Next thing I know, I'm getting hit from behind or I'm getting shot or I'm getting stabbed because I wasn't aware of my surroundings. Yeah. And I have my kid with me. Yeah. What am I going to do? You know, right. It's like, hey, there's sometimes you have to be a good witness. And sometimes, you know, if you're by yourself and you weigh those options and it's in a life or death situation and you decide to take action, you better fucking take action.
Well, and that was one of the things my dad, you know, and I adopted this with my kids too, is I had a signal. And I'll tell you what my dad's was. My dad told me, he says, "Son, if something happens and I have to pull my gun out and use it, I'm going to fake a heart attack." He says, if you see me out and about and I start, something bad's happening and I start to have a heart attack, don't touch me. Don't get anywhere near, just back away. That is your cue that something's about to happen. And I have to, you know, he said, it would only be in the worst case scenario, but you know, that's your cue. And I said, "Okay, Dad." And I just, you know, and I had something similar with my kids and, you know, you discussed it ahead of time. God forbid that's something that could happen, but you have to really set that line in the sand of you know, and if it doesn't rise to the level of I'm saving somebody else's life, then you really need to consider, do you even need to be doing it at all? Just because if like, they always show cops in a bank and the bank gets held up and one of the cops goes, I'm off, like, what was Point Break, right? The guy's like, I'm a cop, you know, and he pulls his gun and he gets shot and killed.
Yeah.
It's also the same thing when cops point a gun at somebody off duty and they say freeze. And you go, well, fuck you. At the point that I have to point a gun at you off duty, I'm not going to say freeze. I'm going to shoot you because that's the only reason I'm going to be pointing a gun at you off duty is that I need to shoot you.
Yeah. Or, you know, or you're losing consciousness and that you're
right.
Some guy's attacking you out of nowhere and it's your last option because you feel like you're going to die.
Right.
You know, and you're going to lose consciousness. I mean, but for people who have CCWs and stuff like this, think about this. It's great you went out and got a CCW. I applaud you. I firmly believe in the Second Amendment and right to bear arms and all that stuff.
Yeah, an armed society is a polite society.
Yes. I believe in it very much so, but at the same time, you're not bound or covered by any type of
qualified immunity. Yeah. Well, neither will you guys soon.
Right. Yeah, I won't be a cop if that happens. Because no, right. Then you open yourself up to so much liability and civil complaints and all this other stuff. And it would drive me out. I would lose my house.
Well, and also, if you do get a CCW, go train.
You have to. Absolutely.
Go train. What, you know, it's not enough to become proficient at target shooting and then stick a gun down your waistband. That's not when you're going to be using it.
Yeah. And you got to be proficient with clearing fabric and clearing, you know, drawing out from the waistband.
Right.
Also practice proper trigger control and finger discipline. So you don't shoot your pecker off or moral artery in your leg. But you got to understand, if you're getting ready to use that gun, know that you could be opening yourself up for some sort of liability. And just weigh those options out before you take action. And obviously, if you need to save someone's life or your own life, and it's immediate life or death, do the right thing. But at the same time, know your surroundings, know who you're with. You have your kids, be a fucking good witness. Unless you think this is just you can't not take action, and you can't live with it. And if you can't do it, then fucking take action. But have a plan set in place, especially if you have your kids. Like Tom said, and many of us have the same cues. Like, hey, if I say car, that means go to the fucking car. Don't argue with me or get out of here. That means go to the car. Don't argue. Just listen and leave.
Yep.
Once I know you're safe and you're clear, you may hear some things. If you hear screaming, yelling, just keep
stay going. Here.
Yep. Don't come back.
Don't come back. Cause that's happened too. Well, I hope that answers your question. We'll get to some more when we get that episode. But Chris, I appreciate you coming on. We like to dedicate every episode to either a fallen brother or sister, veteran, firefighter, or police officer, and we always give our guest a chance to do that. So if there's anybody you'd like to dedicate your episode to.
I did not know him. Officer Anzora, Los Angeles Police Department. Chuck, they get the name right only because I don't know him from Newton.
I do not know. I can look it up real quick.
Yeah, I believe it's Officer Anzora. He was holding traffic after. I'm going to speak police jargon, but after it was already code 4 apparently at a following of a code 37. So a felony stop and an officer's holding traffic while they're doing the investigation is what's happening. And he's standing and he gets hit by another car. Just an accident.
Yeah.
Not a DUI driver or anything like that. And I reached out to some friends who work that division and they kind of told me the details that don't need to be spoken about. But he didn't make it. And he wasn't doing anything, quote unquote, heroic. You know, he wasn't in a shootout.
No, he was doing his job.
What we all do every day. We hold a corner. Yeah. We hold a corner.
And his name is Officer Jose Anzora.
Yeah, you got it right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, Officer Anzora, we've got it from here. Rest easy, brother. Chris, go ahead and give the name of your foundation and your podcast out again.
Yeah, it's going to be Blue Coat Foundation. And the podcast is the Fallen But Not Forgotten podcast.
And where can people listen to that?
It's on Spotify,
Apple, Google, all that. Okay. Yeah. All right. Hey, wherever they consume podcasts, as they like.
Yeah. Right now, we're, like I said, we're totally like kind of branding it. So we're even redoing the website. Nice. The best way right now is either just email me, Chris at bluecoatmusic.org, or just follow us on Instagram or Facebook for now.
And can we be expecting any fundraisers in the near future, maybe after COVID's done?
Did you say fundraisers?
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. I'm actually looking at venues now. A couple of our staple events, one of them is Inked in Honor, where we donate tattoos to family and friends of fallen officers. Kind of it's not really being done, and it's one of our – I really want to scale that one and take it around the country. So I do want to do that one this year, even if it's smaller.
Well, my co-host on the Locker Room podcast, Marco, who has been friends with me since I was 14, happens to be a very prolific tattoo artist. So any awesome help we can provide and any help, we'll be glad to get involved.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm going to – because I need to look for about 5 or 6 tattoo artists who will volunteer sometime for sure.
Okay.
We don't have the full funding that we need yet, so we rely a lot on volunteers. That'd be awesome.
Okay.
So that and a lot of musical events that I want to do, as always. But that's the big one, and working on another project indoor. That one will take a year or two to plan. So
awesome.
Yeah, when we can finally go back indoors. well, appreciate it. And I hope your audience wasn't too shocked by some of the stuff we discuss. It sounds like it gets pretty deep over there, but you know,
this is your podcast. Have you guys got into a dead bodies a lot before? Or
oh my gosh, we've gotten into today. This isn't even close to the worst episode we've ever had.
Well, you guys keep it real here. You guys are, I'm telling you, you guys are at a bar after at the end of the watch having.
Yeah, that's really what we wanted it to be like, and we just wanted it to be. This is. We keep it real. The only thing I'll edit out is if somebody happens to drop operational information or, personal information or department information that could, you know, cause problems. But, you know, I put that warning at the beginning of this podcast for a reason. and it definitely is war stories. So for sure.
Yeah. I mean,
very cool.
No better way than just talking about it and not sugarcoating it.
Yeah, I always say now, I said, I group therapy is stupid. Also, I run a podcast that's secretly group therapy. So, all right. Well, we appreciate you coming on, Chris. Chuck, do you have anything? Besides the case of the red ass over remodeling your house?
Nah, dude, I'm so tired of remodeling this freaking place. Not to mention, I hurt my shoulder. Fucking just do nothing.
But now that we're starting to get a little bit of time back, Chuck has graciously agreed to help me to deliver an episode we've been asked multiple times for. That's not just the, you know, how to become a cop episode, but we are going to do our end of watch movie watch review. And we're going to discuss with some people that would know how good or bad or accurate or full of shit is that movie, because we've been asked multiple times.
I like that.
So we'll definitely do that one for you guys as well. Chuck's going to come back for that. And until our next episode, come home with your shield or on it.